Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
To the Savage Nation, and the question is this. You can shut the music off, because we all know that the Caucasian caucus has virtually no meaning whatsoever. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It is a Caucasian caucus that we are watching. It's not even a primary. It's nothing more than a straw poll of a few folks in Iowa, and yet the media is turning it into a mini primary as though it really matters. And that's why I say to you, I have a fear that Obama will win re-election. And the reason I say that is because the bland played on. And so I ask you, what would you do if Obama wins re-election? What would you do? I mean, I heard things in the past of what people would do if various presidents won on the left or the right. They'd leave the country. They'd do this. They'd do that. How would you change your life if the most... I don't want to say left-wing, because this is not a left-wing government in the sense that we know it. This is the first naked Marxist that we've ever had in the White House. It's the first Marxist presidency on a minor scale at this point, but not so minor when you consider he just passed the NDAA, which gives him the right, the sole right, the tyrannical right, the authoritarian right, to arrest an American citizen, even to execute them without trial. I don't think you understand what's happening in front of your eyes, but what will you do if Obama wins re-election? I have a fear he may win re-election, and I'll tell you why. I was reading a blog at Harvard Law blog, and they say that people are afraid of change and will favor an incumbent if one is available. They say Obama ended the Iraq War and he will get credit for it. They say Americans know in their hearts that Obama is not responsible for the stagnant economy. Now, that's all true for the average person. Those who have studied this administration recognize it is the most corrupt in American history. I only have to say the word Solyndra, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. The economy is not growing at all. So what does Mitt Romney offer, assuming he becomes the Republican opposition? Well, he could say that he's a businessman, which is true. But his business record will be analyzed and sifted and sorted. And by the time the deviants on the left get through with him, they will make his business record look anything but what he wants it to be. The fact of the matter is, there's a lot of problems in this country that have more to do with the people than it does with the individual leading the country. There happen to be an awful lot of Americans who, on average, don't really work that hard and haven't achieved very much. In other words, they're lazy and they're losers. The fact of the matter is, you can blame the politicians all you want, but if you look around the world, you can see that we are out of control. As they point out in this blog, a country has people who earn a median wage of $16.27 per hour, and they cannot afford to pay $100,000 to $200,000 a year in pensions to policemen and firefighters who retire at 42 or 50 after rigging the system, retiring with medical benefits based upon false illnesses that they claim they got in their last year of service. We know that we can't afford our massive military or unlimited payments to Medicare providers without taxing people at 100% of their income. We know that we cannot afford to pay working-age people to sit home and watch television and collect 99 weeks of unemployment benefits. We know that China is growing 10% per year. Why? Because businesses there have employees who have a better education and a better work ethic than the idiot children who are coming out of our schools. We know that countries like Singapore now enjoy a higher per capita income than the United States does. Why? Because they can deliver basic government services at a tiny fraction of the cost as a percentage of GDP, because they're not bound by union criminality. We know that our public schools are set up to benefit teachers and administrators rather than students. and unions, and therefore the outlook for competitiveness has gotten worse, not better, with the advent of this twisted, topsy-turvy system. And so therefore, if you look at our politicians, if you look at Romney, or you look at Obama, or you look at any of the others, what do you think is going to happen? And I raise the question, if Obama wins re-election, because of all of what I've just said to you, what would you do? Would you change your life? Would you leave the country? Would you go along as you have gone on? Because as the bland played on, it looks very much to me as though Obama is the real winner. The Republicans are killing each other, as we have said. Moreover, the Caucasian caucus does not reflect America as it is today. I'm open for business as usual on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you want to talk about these topics or the questionable, frightening NDAA bill passed at midnight on New Year's Eve while you were drunk and celebrating, which gave the president extraordinary powers. He can have the military arrest anyone in this country who they claim to be aiding Al-Qaeda without trial. Did you hear what I just said to you? What does this mean? What does this mean? The law applies to anyone who was a part of or substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces, close quote. And that means an American can be held without trial until the end of hostilities. Now, what does that mean, anyone who was a part of or substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces? What if you link to an article from Al Jazeera, which is somewhat soft on Al-Qaeda or the Taliban? And what if a fanatic inside the Obama administration says that therefore you supported Al-Qaeda or the Taliban? You could be arrested. You could be arrested. And so therefore you have to understand that even the heads of several security agencies, the head of the FBI opposed it, the head of the CIA opposed it, the director of national intelligence opposed it, the attorney general opposed it. The Pentagon even said it was against the bill. Yet Obama forced it down the throats of Congress. How did he do so? He appealed to their greedy nature. He said to them, you want that bridge to nowhere in Iowa? You want that plant in Oklahoma? Then you've got to give me these powers. It happened New Year's 1231. It's called the National Defense Authorization Act. It was pushed primarily by that dumb moron, John McCain, and by that other Sterling representative, the slumlord from Michigan named Carl Levin. They pushed it as though it was something good for America. The fact is that this bill now enshrines powers in the presidency that previously had only been empowered in Kim Jong-il and other of his ilk. So what would happen if Obama wins re-election? Now, several did oppose Obama's power grab on 1231, which he signed while he was in Hawaii, perhaps enjoying a pineapple pizza. Several opposed it. Rand Paul opposed the NDAA bill, which was very, very amazing. As I say to you, there were some who stood up to this power grab, but you didn't even read about it in your newspaper. What shocks me is that with all of this nonsense about Iowa, you've lost what actually happened on New Year's with Obama. He did something that is unheard of in American history. He took a power grab that no one has ever seen taken before. There is no waiver. They can detain a person in military custody, even if you are a United States citizen. There is no waiver. You can be arrested. All you need is somebody in the Obama administration to claim that you supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces that are engaged in hostilities against the United States. This man was opposed by the FBI, the CIA, the Director of National Intelligence. The Attorney General allegedly objected to the legislation. The Pentagon was against it. Elements of the law are so legally confusing, as well as being constitutionally questionable, that any detentions are almost certain to be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court, but it won't matter. You will be in a military brig while the Supreme Court is thinking about the case. If Obama wins, if this mini-dictator becomes a maxi-dictator, if he goes from being a crypto dictator to an overt dictator, I'm asking you, what are you going to do? Because it's not going to be the same country you're living in. Make no mistake about it. Most of the American people are too dumb to care. Most of the American people don't pay any taxes. Most of the American people could care less if we had a dictatorship. In fact, most of them would like a dictator. And so therefore, what would you do if this man should win again? Let's move to the callers now on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, New York City, WOR. Fortune, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd just like to say I do see him coming into office one more time. And as of 19 months ago, I had purchased an apartment in Israel, and I do plan to move because of him.
You would feel safer in Israel, even with the threat of annihilation from Iran, than you do in the United States of America. Why is that?
I believe Israel is a strong country. I think they're able to do things on their own. They don't.
Do you believe Israel has more civil liberties than the United States of America under this tyrant?
I don't know about that, but I do feel that Israel will be more advanced in technology and their army and everything.
No, but Israel's a very small, land area surrounded by hostile Muslims that want to wipe it off the map. I don't know why you would choose that. I mean, unless you're choosing it as a place to go for your final stage of life. I don't understand how you would feel safer in Israel, but to each his own. I'm asking you, what would you do if Obama wins re-election? Will you change anything in your life, or will you go along as usual? Wisconsin, Terry, you're next up on the Savage Nation.
My beloved doctor, my husband and I are planning to take the Bible's advice and flee to the Judean hills. And I don't mean in Israel. I mean in Utah. Get out and get off the grid and just disappear into the wilderness. We already have a plan. We already know what we're going to do. We're already saving dry goods. We're saving food. We're saving water.
All right, so you are a survivalist, and you feel that if Obama wins again, you're ready to go to DEFCON 3.
I really don't see how we can't. And the only people that are thinking are the ones that know what's going to happen next. We're thinking, I guess, long-term or into the future.
Well, what's frightening here is that this man did this while on vacation in Hawaii. He seized power that is unheard of in American history, and the media didn't even cover it. By and large, it was uncovered. But how do you feel about that dumb moron, McCain, pushing for this power for a president? You'd expect it from a psychopath like Levin. But why would McCain, who he himself allegedly fought for our freedoms, why would he grant the president freedoms that are not in the Constitution?
I think there's a lot of confusion in the United States about who our real enemies are. And it's like Pogo said, I have seen the enemy.
So in other words, all you have to do is say to John McCain, terrorism, and he'll pass give any amount of power to the president. Is that it? He's a knee-jerk. He's just a knee-jerker.
Yeah.
It's pretty frightening, people. If you just tuned in, I was talking about this all day yesterday in the Savage Nation. The NDAA is one of the most shocking power grabs in the history of this republic. It gives the president exclusive authority to place you or anyone else in this country as an American citizen through the military. Not police, not state troopers. He has violated the Posse Comitatus Act, which has been in place for a very long period of time. He has given the authority for the United States Armed Forces to detain covered persons, even U.S. citizens. We have gone from Posse Comitatus to Posse Obamatatus. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Again, the Caucasian caucus that we're all supposedly be interested in tonight does not represent America. I don't think you understand the caucus in Iowa has some bearing on the election, but not the bearing that the media would have you believe. By the way, this is not even in the Constitution. The Iowa caucuses, as I understand it, only began in 1972. It's not even a primary. It's like a straw poll. All it is, Caucasian caucuses in Iowa, are neighborhood meetings in which participants voice their preferences among the candidates for president. That's all it is. And what bothers me the most is that I'm sitting here as though I'm not an American citizen. I feel as though I've lost my citizenship watching this. Who made a bunch of farmers in Iowa whole citizens? What am I, 4/5 a man? I feel as though I'm living in the antebellum South. I feel as though I'm a slave looking in on the master and watching him vote. What is this? What kind of country am I living in? What am I, 4/5 a man? A bunch of farmers in Iowa get to tell me who my candidate is going to be as a Republican? What country am I living in? Who devised this crazy system? It's not in the Constitution. How in the hell does a, how the heck does a party go through a thing like this? So as I say to you, I'm offended by this. I'm offended by it. It's also been destructive for the Republican Party, which maybe is a good thing. Maybe one day we'll get a real candidate who we can really back instead of, you know, what shall I say here? The bland and the bland played on. Another check pants Republican is going to run against Obama. We're going to get Bush 2. It'll really be like Bush 3 with Romney. Of course, I'll sleep better at night, I suppose. I would trust him more than I do the Marxist in the White House. But nevertheless, that's not the point. So what would you do? What will you do? Well, what would you do is the correct phrase, the correct tense. What would you do if Obama wins re-election is what I'm asking you. Mary, Robert, Jim, Barbara, Roy, Mike, Mark, we got calls from around the country. Let's go to Florida. Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, the single biggest reason not to get Obama reelected is the U.S. Supreme Court. You know, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg gets off, they'll just replace, he'll replace her with another liberal.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you get one more after that, you might as well hang up this country because, as you know, what the Supreme Court has done recently, with particularly with the two new women on there, is when they make a statement like...
You mean the unqualified women, don't you? The unqualified women, they're not even superior judge. They're not even superior lawyers, these women.
Precisely. And
these were not even superior lawyers. They were not known for any of their legal findings. They were simply put there as stooges of the radical left.
Precisely. And when one said that we all know that we legislate from the bench... I mean, that's absurd.
When in your life would you have ever thought you would wake up to a person who has literally no legal supremacy to have been made into a Supreme Court justice? Do you really believe Sotomayor is of a Supreme Court quality? This is very much along the lines of what went on in Mao Zedong's China when they took... uneducated people and turn them into surgeons and turn the surgeons into laundresses in order to make sure that the past injustices were so-called made up for. We're living through it right now. Make no mistake about it. Communism light.
Savage.
All the eyes are on the Caucasian caucus. You know, it has a certain degree of validity. Really, it is a neighborhood meeting, but everyone's looking at it. The other day, I had a vigorous discussion. It wasn't an argument with my good friend Chris Ruddy, who is the CEO of Newsmax. And Chris is a big supporter of Newt Gingrich. He had taken exception to my comments about Newt Gingrich, who I think is unelectable. And we had an argument over it without really, I wouldn't say an argument, we had a heated discussion. So I said, Chris, would you like to be on the Savage Nation? Because Newsmax has been good to me. He said, sure. So joining us right now is my good friend Chris Ruddy of Newsmax Magazine. Chris, welcome to the program.
Michael, I am glad to be back on with you as always.
Well, you are a big supporter of Newt Gingrich. And instead of us arguing for show, tell the audience what you like about Newt and why you think he could beat Obama if he should win.
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons, Michael. First of all, Newt is a consistent conservative. He has a long, long track record of being a conservative. A few times he's gone off the reservation, really bringing home the fact that he is indeed a consistent conservative in my mind. And secondly, I also think he's a stronger candidate. I think that the Obama people want Mitt Romney as their candidate. So at the moment, although I haven't officially endorsed Newt Gingrich, I told you that I am supporting Newt at the moment.
Okay, but let me ask you something. Let me state something here. On the Drudge Report right now, your good friend Matt has a poll going or a vote, you know, with all the candidates. And you know who's winning right now is Ron Paul.
Well, Ron Paul has an incredibly enthusiastic audience, a lot of young people, a lot of people who are very internet-oriented. Ron also traditionally is getting a protest vote, people that don't want foreign aid and the like. So he's, you know, if Ron Paul was our candidate, you know, we could bag it. I don't think the Republican Party is going anywhere.
Well, we agree on that. that if Ron Paul wins the primary, not the caucuses, it's over. Obama wins, and my prediction is he would win by about, I'd say, 60 to 40, if not 70 to 30. Ron Paul is unelectable.
Well, the idea that he wants to close every single American military base in the world shows that the man is not completely there.
I think he's deranged. I personally think he's deranged. You know, what's, Chris, you've been in the business as long as I have. You're a former newspaper reporter. You've been around a long time. What is this hatred for the Federal Reserve that he seems to be harping on?
Well, I think there's justified anger that people have about the Federal Reserve. They have increased the monetary base by trillions and trillions of dollars. And I think thinking people realize that the dollar, which is the unit that denominates all of our wealth, is going to hell, and it's going to be in trouble, and it's going to be dissipated, and it won't. The effect of it's only just beginning. I mean, you see it at the oil, you see it in the food stores, you see it at the gas stations.
Right.
And I don't think the Federal Reserve has done us any favors. I think they've given some quick fixes, and they've been playing with the economy. Now this goes well past the past 2 years. I mean, this has gone on for the heavily politicized.
But is this what Paul's biggest appeal is to the dissident, is the Federal Reserve? What is his appeal?
Well, I think he's sort of the ultimate protest candidate. He wants to end foreign aid, end every military obligation we have, end the Federal Reserve. He sort of takes your anger and brings it out to the 10th degree. I mean, and I understand people are angry, but they also have to realize that, that Ron Paul's going way, way overboard. You couldn't abolish the Federal Reserve. It's just wacko. We'll have a world war. I don't think that puts us in any better position if we pull out of Korea and the Middle East and other places that we're at right now.
What about Mitt Romney? I mean, we both agree Mitt Romney is sort of Bush 3. It's the third Bush administration if Romney wins. Is that what you think, Chris?
Well, Michael, you were out front for years decrying the Bush administration. Newsmax was critical when George W. Bush was putting through, like, No Child Left Behind, the prescription drug program. I mean, really, the largest social spender in U.S. history was George W. Bush up until the time Barack Obama came along.
Right.
I think Bush did some great things. I think he's a true patriot. But I don't think we want to repeat. I think the problem, you know, you have another sort of Bush-light administration, or Democratic-light, which I think Mitt Romney would be. We might see the end of the Republican Party. I think Mitt really has to demonstrate, if he wants to win this nomination, that he really has a view that's a contrarian to what's going on in Washington. And he hasn't really closed the deal, in my mind.
Chris, what happened to the Tundra Tootsie? Why did she disappear? Where'd she go?
The Tundra Tootsie.
Sarah Palin. Remember, she was touted. Why did the Tundra Tootsie drop out of the picture?
Well, I think she was brutalized during that period by the media attacking her. Look how each of these candidates, I think one of the reasons we don't have a really deep field of quality candidates, I think we have some good people, but we don't have a wide field of it, is everybody's being castigated by the media. You know, it's unbelievable the media that did almost no vetting of Barack Obama. We didn't even know anything about his religion or his family or where he went to school.
Right.
And the minute Sarah Palin was nominated, they were checking everything she did up in Wasilla, Alaska.
It was horrible. It was just horrible. And the same thing applies to even Romney's Mormonism. Finally, Chris, you're a friend of Donald Trump. You're a member of his club. I'm a member of that Mar-a-Lago. I have to disclose that. Do you think that he would be a spoiler if he throws his hat in the ring as a third-party candidate?
I think Donald Trump is an amazing political force. He's an incredible, savvy businessman, as we know. And I think he's told me many times, he wants to support the Republican that will defeat Barack Obama. But if the Republican Party nominates someone like Michelle Bachmann or Ron Paul, I think you could see the Donald Trump getting involved in a very serious way in politics. I think right now he's keeping his options open. And I think, you know, he's got polls show that the American people, if any one American, he gets the largest number of votes of people who would vote for either the Republican or Democratic Party. So he's got a lot of influence, and I think it's a positive influence.
You know, we've been talking about the NDAA on this show for 2 days now, which was passed on New Year's Eve by Obama. It was opposed by the FBI, the CIA, even the military opposed it, granting the president extraordinary powers to arrest any American on American soil and detain them indefinitely. Chris, why is this not a bigger story? This is shocking.
Well, I've covered it. We've covered it on Newsmax. We've covered it. I was never completely happy with the Patriot Act, the ability to really subvert constitutional rights for U.S. citizens, and the amount of information that government officials are allowed to get on people without warrants.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that they can't, it's very easy for the government to set up a 24-hour system of judges, FISA judges, and others to declare these warrants. You know, Michael, we defeated the Soviet Empire in a titanic struggle that lasted over 40 years, was it?
Right.
And the FBI and the CIA was able to do that under a constitutional form of government without unusual powers going against civil liberties.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand. We have a bunch of ragtag terrorists, and Americans have to give up some of our basic sacred civil liberties.
Well, Chris, what scares me, and I don't scare that easily about politics, because to me it's so corrupt in so many ways that I don't even personalize it sometimes. But do you realize that this law is so broad that it says that anybody who substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces can be arrested on American soil? So you run a big website. I have a radio show. What if a lawyer inside the Obama administration says Chris Ruddy supported Al-Qaeda because he linked to an Al Jazeera article? Theoretically, they could arrest you.
Yeah, well, the operative word there, you said that the government, that the person has supported. Well, really, it's what a government official thinks you have done.
Yeah, right.
You're giving them a power without a judicial authority, an independent judicial authority to arrest you. They have the right to detain you for a period of time. So this is a dangerous precedent, I think, these things that are done in the defense of for national security purposes. And we should really look very carefully at this, because right now I don't think our civil liberties are threatened, but there could become a time during a national emergency where someone might try to take advantage of that. And that's where we want to be on guard. This is not a left-right issue. I think a lot of liberals would agree.
I agree. The ACLU opposed it. The Human Rights Watch opposed it. The FBI opposed it. And yet Obama signed it while on vacation in Hawaii. I only bring it up, Chris, because people are alarmed. And I think that the power of Newsmax is such, and your reach into both sides of the aisle is such, that you really should look into this in a lot more detail. You have the resources to do it, and I don't.
Well, we have, and we will continue to, and I think it's important to have a president, and I hope if Mitt Romney's the nominee, he will be someone that will look a little more carefully at some of this instead of be knee-jerk. I think Newt would be more of an outside-of-the-box thinker about this and not accept what's given to him. I do believe that we do need to make a change, whoever the Republican candidate is.
Right.
If it's Mitt Romney, I will happily support him for president over the current occupant.
Well, Chris Ruddy of Newsmax, I think we had a very interesting conversation just now. You see, you can disagree with someone without arguing with them. Isn't it true?
Michael, you and I have never argued. I've known you for like 15, 20 years now. 20 years probably almost now.
Right.
And
right.
I have once had an argument with you, even though we disagree on many issues.
That's pretty amazing, Chris, and I truly appreciate it. And I thank you very much for being with us today on the Savage Nation. Good luck with your website. It's fabulous.
Happy New Year to you and Shannon.
Yes, and Happy New Year to all of us. It's 45 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Everyone's on the Caucasian caucus right now in Iowa, for whatever it's worth. What are you going to do if the crackpot Paul wins and Romney comes in third? I mean, what are you going to do if the crackpot Paul wins? Can you imagine Paul? Look, let's move forward, all of you who love Ron Paul's ideas, or at least some of them. I want to take you to the general election. On the stage left, you have a young, good-looking black man, Barack Hussein Obama, who the people are familiar with somewhat. We're talking about the average person, not the skilled, intelligent, thoughtful voter, the average person. On the right, you have a spindly, crazy old man who's kind of a curiosity and cute, makes funny little statements about the Federal Reserve and foreign aid. By what percentage does Obama win? Is it 70-30 or is it 80-20? Do you have any idea what you're doing here? Haven't you any idea that you're just giving Obama, perhaps he'll become president for life if you run Ron Paul. The Republican brand will be ruined forever. I mean, we've had sound bites of Ron Paul that would put a talk show host to shame. If Ron Paul were on radio, he probably would have lost his radio show for the things he has said. And that's, you know, that's one thing. But this is the end of the Republican Party as you know it. The Democrats will win for the next 100 years if this man is the candidate. Haven't you any idea what's going on? Okay, go ahead. Keep playing with fire because that's what's going to happen. There's no greater statement that I can make than what I've already said. Ron Paul is not only unelectable, he will destroy the Republican brand forever. All right, let's take your callers. Barbara in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, it won't make any difference if Obama wins or not because all the Republican candidates are the same. And you know, the only candidate, the deranged Ron Paul, is the only one who has spoken out against not only NDAA, but against SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act. He spoke out against the Patriot Act years ago. He's the only one warning about the fascism and the oppression coming to America, and he's been right. And let me.
Well, he is. Hold on. He is right, but he's unelectable.
You supported John McCain 4 years ago, and who is the author of.
Whoa. Hold on a minute. Wait, stop. You wanted me to support Obama?
No. I want you to support the candidate that supports the Constitution, and it doesn't.
Wait. Don't get hysterical, please. It's one thing to say the man has some good ideas and some crazy ideas. It's another thing to be a realist and ask yourself, could he beat Obama? You don't really believe that he could beat Obama, do you?
Obama, that's where you're wrong. You think Newt, Nutcase Newt can beat Obama? You think that?
No, when did I say? Wait, ma'am, stop. You sound like you're hysterical. You're sounding just like Ron Paul. Why are all the Ron Paul addicts so hysterical, I'd like to know?
They care about this country and they're tired.
You mean only you care about the country? I don't care about the country. You care more than I do.
You don't. But let me just say this. The Republicans are no different from the Democrats. Not one of them has spoken out against NDAA or SOPA or the Patriot Act. They're all for going over and bombing all over.
Well, you're wrong. When you say none of them have spoken out, what do you mean? None of the Republican senators?
None of the Republican candidates have spoken out against NDAA except for Ron Paul.
Okay, on this point you are correct, but that still does not make the crackpot electable.
He's not a crackpot, Michael. He's been saying things that you agree with, but
really?
Somehow
he's been saying things I agree with. You mean I agree that Israel should be annihilated and disappeared off the planet like he does?
Say that, Michael, and you know, come on, you're smarter than most of the people who listen to
your
show.
What do you mean? You want me to play the soundbite? I will be happy to play the soundbite of Ron Paul basically calling for Israel's non-existence.
No, he's not. And he's the only one. Let me remind you, in 1980 or 81, when Israel bombed the nuclear power plant in Iran, you know, the only one who supported Israel was Ron Paul. Because Ron Paul believes that Israel should take care of herself, she should have the right to defend herself without any kind of overseer by the United States.
That's all well and good, but where is Israel supposed to get its arms from since all of its weaponry is American? Other than the domestically manufactured material, where is Israel supposed to get its munitions from? The bunker-busting bombs that it has come from the United States of America, so that's a moot point to say Israel should defend itself. Without weapons, it can't defend itself.
It's got plenty of weapons, Michael, and you know it. It's got more weapons probably than we do by now. And they do a damn pretty good job of defending themselves. Remember the raid on Entebbe? They do very well.
Entebbe was a long time ago. That's when they had real leadership in Israel, before the people with Saks Fifth Avenue charge accounts in New York took over the country. That's before the Russians came to Israel. That's when Israel was still Israel. Israel's a shell of its former self.
And it's up to Israel to get its own leadership. Like, it's up to the United States to get its leadership that's authorized by the Constitution and restore.
I agree with you, but you're still not answering the fundamental question, Barbara, because I think you're blinded with passion, which in some ways is a good thing, but also you don't have the long vision. I'm trying to bring you up to a final debate between Ron Paul and Barack Obama. Now, forget the ideas. Do you understand that many elections are based upon looks rather than on substance?
Michael, I don't care. I've been voting since 1972, and I voted for George McGovern because he was anti-war. So it's not like I'm naive and I just was born
So you're
yesterday.
Confirming what I suspect, that most people who support Ron Paul are dyed-in-the-wool liberals.
I'm not a liberal, Michael.
What would you say McGovern was?
I'm an American who believes...
Well, now you're parsing words. Most supporters of Ron Paul are diehard liberals, only they confuse themselves into thinking that they're libertarians.
Not true, Michael. And if you want to find...
Are you by any chance a Unitarian religious-wise?
No, I'm Jewish, Michael. I'm Jewish.
No, the reason I ask is because many libertarians are simply liberals who are Unitarian, and they don't even understand that.
I'm Jewish, and I'm a constitutionalist. And I believe in this country.
Look, I respect your opinion. I respect your right to have an opinion on Ron Paul. He's unelectable, though, because I understand the American public probably as well, if not better than most. I'm telling you, you put this crackpot on the stage and Obama on the other side of the stage, it's a landslide for Obama.
I disagree with you, Michael.
All right. We can disagree as friends. My father's store had a little sign in it that said, Don't go away, Mayor, just go away. That's the sign that hangs over the microphone here in the Savage Studio. It doesn't say, don't go away, Mayor, just go away. He had that little sign in his antique store. I used to love that sign. I'll be right back right here on the Savage Nation to talk about the Caucasian Caucus in Iowa.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here we are today on the day of the caucuses.
Republican caucus goers going and voting today.
The fight for Iowa may depend on one group, all the undecided voters.
They were still tasting the flavor of different candidates.
Stop right here. The Caucasian caucus is really a media circus. It's a product of the media. It has some bearing on the election. But as I say to you, I feel as though I'm a stranger in a strange land. I feel as though I'm four-fifths a human. Who gave a few hundred people in Iowa supremacy as to who will be the Republican candidate? When did this happen? It's not enshrined in the Constitution. And yet here we are, victims of a media frenzy to simply fill up airspace and give the leg crossers and the lipstick appliers something to talk about, since if they didn't have this to talk about, they'd be at a loss to say anything. I can't take it anymore. What is a caucus? Do you actually know what it is? It's less than a straw poll. A caucus is a neighborhood meeting in which citizens voice their preferences among the candidates for the president. That's all it is. That's all it is. It's not in the U.S. Constitution. The Iowa caucuses have been the first step in the presidential nominating process only since 1972. And the first candidate to use the Caucasian caucuses to gain national exposure was none other than the anti-war left-wing fanatic George McGovern in 1972. But Jimmy the Jew Hater Carter's strong showing in 1976 launched the psycho from virtual unknown Jew hater to front runner and solidified the Caucasian caucus's national influence. Just to show you, though, how distorted these people are, they would take a nut like Jimmy Carter and put him to the front of the pack. So I wouldn't be surprised if the lunatic Ron Paul wins tonight. In fact, I would expect it. It's to be expected. I expect that the lunatic will win. If you'd like me to, I can play some of the Ron Paul pieces for you to know what you're in for. He has destroyed the Republican brand. Unless he is put on an ice floe as soon as possible, it will be the end of the Republican Party for about 50 years, because the opposition will use Ron Paul's sound bites to take all of the wavering independents and chase them away from moving over to the Republican side. They'll be afraid of this party forever when you listen to Ron Paul. So what we have to do here is, I guess I have to wake you up to who the man actually is. You know, he seems like a cantankerous, bright guy, and he's right about certain things and wrong about others, just like any human being. But you have to listen to some of this. So let's start with his own insider and listen to what he had to say about Ron Paul.
He was ranting and raving. I mean, he honestly believed that this was, that Muhammad Atta had nothing to do with this, or was at least a pawn of the CIA, or, you know, it wasn't Islamic terrorists that attacked us, that somehow, some way, the CIA was behind it. And he ranted it to me personally. He ranted to Tom Lizardo, the chief of staff, and I gotta tell you that our district staff, we had our jaws dropped. We were like, I cannot believe this. This is a guy we work for. He thinks that Israel is just a burden on the U.S. taxpayer, and that it's more trouble than it's worth. And he sides with the Palestinians. I mean, he thinks that they're justified in not only taking over the West Bank and Gaza, but just in all of Israel.
Well, now that sentiment, by the way, is not limited to Ron Paul. The fact is, this is a sentiment that is rife in liberal circles or so-called progressive circles. In that sense, Ron Paul would be an ideal progressive candidate, if you want to use the word progressive when you're, what you really mean is regressive. But nevertheless, Ron Paul is by no means a conservative. Almost everything he espouses is hardcore liberalism, and it's very confusing for people. So I think that we have to go to the man himself for a few other sound bites. Bay, we'll play him away. Go ahead.
Just think of how many nuclear weapons surround Iran. The Chinese are there, the Indians are there, the Pakistanis are there, the Israelis are there, the United States is there. All these countries, China has nuclear weapons. Why wouldn't it be natural that they might want a weapon? There'd be, internationally, they'd be given more respect. We so know that...
Hold on, stop for a minute. That's old Ron Paul arguing for Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon, without understanding that there's a difference between a nation owning a nuclear weapon or many nuclear weapons and a nation who has avowedly said that when they get a nuclear weapon, they will wipe Israel off the planet. I don't think he understands that there's a difference between knowing your enemy and sympathizing with your enemy. In that sense, his boundaries don't exist, and in that sense, he is deranged. He is a deranged individual. In other words, even a deranged individual can think, but he thinks in a deranged fashion, and his boundaries are blurred. I think this is what I've been trying to get across to you. Even deranged people make sense sometimes. I truly believe Ron Paul is deranged.
It is helpful for people who have cancer and are getting chemotherapy. So this is not a great, a huge radical idea. It's something that was
so
legal.
The potheads love him. All the potheads, the deranged potheads who think that their thinking is clearer than it was before they used the most dangerous drug on earth, the gateway drug, tetrahydrocannabinol, and the other associated toxins that are in THC. Marijuana smoke is far more toxic than cigarette smoke, but don't tell that to the potheads. They're convinced that it's from nature, and therefore it's natural, it must be good. This is an old argument, of course. I can point out to you that there are many natural substances that can harm you or kill you. But again, you can't argue with drug addicts. And make no mistake about it, marijuana is a very dangerous drug, precisely because many people have been led to believe that it is a benign drug. It isn't. It's a gateway drug on top of it all. There is another element to this legalization business, that you have to face, which is that none other than George Soros spent millions upon millions of dollars in an attempt to legalize drugs, marijuana, excuse me, in Arizona and in California many years ago, about 10 years ago. So there's no difference in Ron Paul's stance on marijuana than that of George Soros. There's no difference in Ron Paul's stance on Iran getting a nuclear weapon and that of Al-Qaeda. There's no difference in Ron Paul's stance on Israel and that of the most far left, let us say, Bill Ayers bomb thrower type. So if you'd like to hear a little bit more of Ron Paul, I'm afraid you're going to hear a lot more of Ron Paul, because if he should win the Caucasian caucus, it's only going to begin. And by the way, Barack Obama must be sitting back with his feet up enjoying a pineapple pizza tonight as he watches. If I were them and I had just come back from Hawaii and I watched this Caucasian caucus ongoing, this charade, and I see that this nut is liable to win, and I realize that this guy's sound bites are like made for television, I can't tell you what this is doing for them. They're probably going to go on another vacation very soon if he should win. So before we take a quick commercial break, let's go for a few more of the wit and wisdom of Ron Paul here on the Savage Nation.
The real motivation behind the September 11th attacks and the vast majority of other instances of suicide terrorism is not that our enemies are bothered by our way of life. Neither is it our religion or our wealth. Rather, it is primarily occupation. If you were to imagine for a moment...
Let's stop right there. So here he is espousing the equivalent of the big lie. Here he is espousing the equivalent of Henry Ford's universal Jew. Here he is espousing the biggest lie of the century, which is that all of radical Islam is excited around the world because of the Jews. Well, Mr. Paul, how do you explain the bombings in Bali? Can you blame that on the Jews of Israel? No, I guess not. And Mr. Paul, how do you explain the bombings in Mumbai, where so many people who were Hindus and of Indians, you know, they were killed? They had nothing to do with Israel, Ron. I guess you could blame it on Jews somehow if you wanted to stretch things and you wanted to believe in the protocol of the Elders of Zion, Ron. I suppose that might be one of your campaign treatises. Adolf had his book Mein Kampf, and you could get the protocols of the Elders of Zion and hold it up. I know that Henry Ford gave it out to some of his leading supporters. This is insanity, because wherever you look on the planet, even in Nigeria, last week, Christmas time, Muslims threw acid in the face of a black Christian bishop because they hated his religion. Again, nothing to do with Israel, nothing to do with Jews, but to a deranged whack job like Ron Paul, he sees everything through the lens of the naked Jew hater. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So here we are. Here we are. If I'm a little low energy tonight, it's because I have a bit of a cold, a head cold. You could probably hear it. My mind is functioning, but what can you do? That's all. I mean, the fact is that I'm enthusiastic about tonight only because it shows the absurdity of the American electoral system. And as I say, as I sit here, it disturbs me because I feel as though I'm four-fifths a human. I feel as though I'm a slave watching the master through the plantation window going about the business of democracy. The master being the white folk of Iowa, the Caucasians, going about their ponderous business of selecting who will be the candidate for the Republican ticket. Now, the rest of America be damned, but a few hundred thousand Iowans will now tell the entire world who is the best candidate. This excludes all of the coastal cities. This excludes the huge demographic change in America since 1972 when the Iowa caucus was first established. And yet they go on as though this is the Holy Grail. As though it's the Holy Grail and will determine who will be the candidate to oppose the naked Marxists. So what can I say to you? It's almost amusing. I mean, I could say it's amusing, but I don't want to use this kind of British detached attitude. It's amusing in one regard. It's disturbing, really, in another regard. And so, therefore, we come back to you, the listener, and tell me what you think. Do you agree with me that, A, this election has gone on too long, the selection process, number one? Number two, do you agree with me that it's time to end the caucuses completely, in that it's an insult to the general voter? And number three, and the third question is, what will you do if this administration wins again? Because it will change your life forever. The power grabs, the corruption, the deceit, the lies, the imperiousness will increase astronomically. That's all I can say to you. So let's take your calls right now on the Savage Nation. What would you do if Obama wins? Las Vegas, Peter, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
The point I wanted to make is if Ron Paul was to make it on the ticket, once he got into debates with Barack Obama, Obama's handlers would set the debate scripted up so that Ron Paul would step in every trap that Barack Obama laid for him, and Ron Paul would look like a complete idiot in a debate.
Correct. In other words, Obama is the least friendly president towards Israel, for example, in modern history, which is why so many Jewish voters turned against the Democrats recently. But Ron Paul is a gift on a silver platter, because the sound bites that I have played will be used by Obama. He's simply going to say to him, do you still agree with your position that Iran should get a nuclear weapon? Now, what can Ron Paul say to that?
Right. They'll pick every bizarre stance that he has on every issue, and they'll bring it up in the debate. Ron Paul will step in the trap, and he'll look like a complete fool, and he'll just get killed in a landslide in the election.
Exactly. He'll melt down, but again, he'll be putting his ego above that of the survival of the nation and survival of the Republican Party. That's how I see it. And I don't think I'm the only one who sees it that way. So here we are. We're going to see tonight what the Caucasians do inside the plantation. We can then go back to our little bonfires and talk about what the masters are doing with regard to the Republican caucus. And then we can talk amongst ourselves like the four-fifth citizens that we apparently are. I'm not bitter. I mean, to me, it's just sarcastic. I'm just using sarcasm to tell you that I'm so fed up with this whole process. I wish it were over with already. I mean, maybe they should just have an election for the presidency in January of the year. Like, what would be wrong with having a general election in January with no caucus? Who needs caucuses? Have one primary, let him fight it out, pick a candidate, have a general debate, and then pick. What is this? Goes on forever. It's a media. This is a product of the media needing to fill airspace. How else would the leg crossers of Fox News make a living? How else could they make a living but going on and on and on and on and on for 2 years? So, here we are. We have callers, of course, on the Savage Nation from around the country, and many of you are cynical. For example, Robert in New York says, well, why don't you listen to what Robert has to say? Thank you for calling from WOR, Robert. Go ahead, please.
Well, Robert in New York probably is going to piss you off a little bit, but I'm with Barbara. I completely disagree with you. I think Ron Paul is the only candidate that can beat Barack Obama, and I think if he did win, he would be the only candidate that would make a difference anyway. Last night you were railing, and I love you, Michael, but last night you were saying that Ron Paul didn't object to the NDAA, and where was his voice with that? But that's not true. He was out there. He is vocal, and he's the only difference, and he's the only candidate on stage that wouldn't have signed such a bill.
Well, actually, I think Rand Paul opposed the NDAA and made a very good case for it. In fact, we have the sound. You're just breaking up. Well, if we have that sound, don't we? Rand Paul, the son of Ron, both doctors, by the way. And we have it from the Senate floor where Rand Paul questioned the old lumbering fool, John McCain, on the bill. Listen to clip two.
Under the provisions, would it be possible that an American citizen then could be declared an enemy combatant and sent to Guantanamo Bay and detained indefinitely?
I think that as long as that individual, no matter who they are, if they pose a threat to the security of the United States of America, should not be allowed to continue that threat.
Notice he didn't answer the question. There's John McCain very much, I think, expressing the either simpleton's view or the view of a Stockholm Syndrome individual, taking the position that you should be able to be locked up as an American if the president wishes it.
Savage.
talking about the Caucasian Caucus, and of course the big one is the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, passed in secret on New Year's Eve by your president, Barack Obama, while on vacation in Hawaii. There were some senators who tried to stand up to this power grab, notably, some of the conservatives, but strangely enough, many liberals, real liberals, stood with them. And yet, strangely or not so strangely, McCain, Levin, and Lindsey Graham were gung-ho on giving this power to the president. I want you to listen to the worst of them all in clip 14, Lindsey Graham.
And to those American citizens thinking about helping Al-Qaeda, please know what will come your way. Death, detention, prosecution. And when they say, I want my lawyer, you tell them, shut up.
Your time is expired.
Don't get a lawyer. You're an enemy combatant, and we're going to talk to you about why you joined Al-Qaeda.
Well, that's all well and good, Mr. Graham, if it's truly a member of Al-Qaeda who wants to harm us, but the law is quite vague on that point. It says that anyone who aids and abets them, now, you know as a lawyer that you can parse the truth in many ways as a legal person, and so therefore you yourself, Mr. Graham, could be detained under this law that you're so happy to pass. It's sort of like the French Revolution going on in America today. In the name of security, we lose our freedoms. In the name of a few crazed Muslim Arabs who bombed us on 9/11, we have now been humiliated to an extent no one in American history would have accepted could have ever happened to us. Think about this, of what we have given up because a few Arab Muslims did this to us on 9/11 over 10 years ago. Instead of racially profiling the individuals who are most likely to do this to us again, they subject your grandmother to humiliation. They take cupcakes away from elderly ladies. They humiliate children with braces on their legs who have polio, all in the name of stopping terror. And where is it going to end? It seems to me it's not ending. It seems that the guillotines are falling, and the guillotines are cutting off our liberties one at a time. And joining this charade was, as I just showed you, Lindsey Graham, Republican. Not to be outdone, though, was none other than the crazy left-winger, the man who allegedly owns many, many, many rental properties in Michigan with his in-laws, old Carl Levin. Yeah, listen to him in clip 13.
The language which precluded the application of Section 1031 to American citizens was in the bill that we originally approved in the Armed Services Committee, and the administration asked us to remove the language which says that U.S. citizens and lawful residents would not be subject to this section.
Do you have any idea what Levin just said? No, he's a liberal. Therefore, you don't know what he just said. But we do know that Senator McCain was 100% gung-ho for it. Listen to clip 12.
I think that as long as that individual, no matter who they are, if they pose a threat to the security of the United States of America, should not be allowed to continue that threat. And I think that's the majority of American public opinion, especially in light of the facts that I continue to repeat to the senator from Kentucky. 27% of detainees who were released got back in the fight and were responsible for the deaths of Americans. We need to take every step necessary to prevent that from happening. That's for the safety and security of the men and women who are out there putting their lives on the line in our armed services.
Well, I think in the name of safety for the men and women in our armed services, all Americans should be considered guilty until found innocent, Mr. McCain. I think that you should consider arresting every American and let them prove that they're not an individual who does not pose a threat to America. That way you'll be very safe. I think if you arrest all Americans and force them to defend themselves, you'll really be safe from terrorism that way. But of course, you don't want to arrest anyone from the Middle East or from Somalia because you might be considered a racist in doing so. The fact of the matter is this law applies to anyone that the government deems to be supporting Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces. You say, well, that wouldn't be me. How do you know? How do you know it wouldn't be you? What if you have a website and you link to an article from Al Jazeera that is somewhat sympathetic to Al-Qaeda in some way? You could say Ron Paul, in calling for Iran's right to develop an atomic bomb, is supporting Al-Qaeda. or Associated Forces. Under this law, Ron Paul could be arrested. Did you hear that? Under the NDAA, Ron Paul could theoretically be arrested for saying that Iran has the right to develop a nuclear weapon. And, of course, he would then have a right to appear once a year before a committee that will decide if the detention will continue, the committee being a kangaroo court, of course. This is a star chamber. You're telling me that a military tribunal is what you want in the United... Where are all of the First Amendment big mouths? They all live in New York. Where are they all? In St. Bart's, still looking at the topless women? Where are all of the loudmouths from the Upper East Side who claim to be First Amendment specialists? When the president passed a law which is so unconstitutional, it doesn't even beg the question of whether or not it is. I oppose it. The FBI opposed it. The CIA opposed it. Director of National Intelligence opposed it. The ACLU opposed it. The Attorney General opposed it. And yet, not one word from any of these big mouth First Amendment experts. I haven't seen this covered on Fox News, have you? Don't the leg crossers realize that it could apply to one of their friends or relatives or even to themselves? I have in front of me excerpts from the NDAA bill, and I think we should put these two pages up, Beowulf, that you extracted up on michaelsavage.com for tonight so that people can see the interpretations of the law, first of all from the sections themselves, then an interpretation from the Guardian, then an interpretation from the left-wing Salon, and then Section 1022 itself, custody for foreign al-Qaeda terrorist-covered persons, and let people decide for themselves whether they think this or any other president should have these extraordinary powers. In that sense, what does this make me politically? Am I a conservative? Am I a liberal? Am I a libertarian? Am I a constitutionalist? You have to understand that you can't be categorized anymore. When it comes to civil liberties, we are all in danger of losing them because of the power madness of this breed of politician that has taken over Washington. Period. End of story. Kansas City, Missouri, you're up on the Savage Nation. Roy, go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm mad as hell. This NDAA is totally unacceptable. It's un-American. No one's talking about it. You're one of the only people talking about this. Fox News giving us this caucus circus going on. This is headline news stuff we're talking about.
This is headline news. It's once in a lifetime that a president does a thing like this on New Year's Eve and steals so much power, and it's not even discussed. It's shocking.
It's I'm shocked. I'm scared. I'm disgusted. No one's talking about it. This should be front page news.
Well, here's the New York Post, owned by Murdoch. Fatal fires, tragic twist. Cameron Diaz shows off toned body. Russell Brand sullen in London. This is what Murdoch feeds the American people. Arnold spotted wearing wedding ring. Woman cleared of self-abortion charge after fetus found in trash. St. Bart's bash boosted blue. Mitt Romney bashes Kim, whatever her name is. I won't even mention the name. I can't even say the name. I get so nauseous even saying that name. This is what the New York Post now puts out. I don't even see this discussed in the New York Times. But I don't think you want to hear this. I think people who are tuning around now, they don't want to hear any of this. They say, cut it out. You're just being an alarmist. You know that they'll never apply. It's to get them guys with the pipe bombs who want to blow up a cop or something. Come on, they're never going to apply it to you. Well, all right, go ahead. Sure. They have goodwill in Washington. All of the men are of goodwill in Washington. Give them all the power in the world and expect them to act nobly. When has a politician last not used the power he had? Can you tell me when a politician did not use every ounce of power he had? Tell me when. Because I see it go on and on. Obama killed Osama bin Laden, and we all say, yay, he killed al-Awlaki, who happened to be a bad guy, but he was an American citizen. And he killed him. Hillary Clinton apparently cheered the killing of an unarmed begging Gaddafi. She actually went over there and said, we came, we saw, he died. And she boasted about it. This is very dangerous to see leaders like this. Seems to me that the leaders are out of control and drunk on their own power because, why? As Lord Acton tried to teach us after World War II, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and we have a breed of politician that has or is gaining absolute power, and the stupider the people seem to be getting, the more powerful the politicians become. Michigan, Tim, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
You know, it's very ironic, if you stop and think about it, Michael, how when we've got terrorists in this country being given our civilian courts with civilian lawyers, and now the peaceful civilians are being fed to the lions and the military to be held indefinitely. And I spit on Lindsey Graham for what he said. What a joke. That guy disgusts me.
Well, Lindsey Graham is a very dangerous man, in my opinion. I've watched him over the years. He used to look conservative, and then I saw he was just a trial lawyer who was posing as a conservative. And the longer I watch him, the more dangerous he becomes. That's all I can say. Another one. A button just fell off my Telos machine. I have to put it back on. God, this is an old unit. Beowulf, get me a new Telos keyboard. It's on with scotch tape. That's how I pick up my call as I press. It just fell off on my desk. If Obama wins, what would you do? Would you leave the country? And if so, where would you go? I mean, let's be realistic. I mean, don't you remember blowhard actors said that if Bush won, they'd leave the country, and they never did, particularly that blowhard Baldwin brother, the worst of all of them, the most overrated, least talented of the bunch, the kind of whale-like, untalented Alec Baldwin said he would leave America. He never left. He never had it so good. Who would take him anyway? I don't think Pakistan is waiting for Alec Baldwin. But if Obama were to win again, what would you do? Where would you go? I mean, would you really leave the country? You think it's that bad? I truthfully don't know what I would do. I actually don't know what I would do. I don't know if I'd leave. Where am I going to go? Leave the country? I'm going to move to where my ancestors fled, where I might have more civil rights than I do here. It seems to me that a Russian today has more opportunity if he has an education and some capital than an American does. A Russian might have more civil rights than an American does under this administration. I know it sounds crazy, but take a look at this. I don't know that they have the right to take anyone off the streets in Russia anymore the way they did in the Soviet times, but I know that they do now in the United States of America. Doesn't this bother you? It should bother you. New York City, Phil, welcome from WOR. Go ahead, please. Okay, well, who else do we have up there? Alabama. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. I wanted to say this NDAA scares me terribly. The administration, or this president, has released suspected terrorists from Guantanamo Bay, but now has the power to put private citizens there and hold them indefinitely. How long will
I don't know what to say. How can anyone ever vote for a Democrat is what I'd like to know. They seem to be power mad and anti-constitution. I never saw anything like it, but where are the Republicans on this issue? Why don't they say anything about it? I think I've made my point on this, so we can move on to the rest of the news that made it up to, the caucuses are coming up. Okay, we're supposed to be paying attention, and according to Drudge, what's his name? Ron Paul is winning. He's going to beat all the rest of them, which is about the worst news I've ever seen in my entire life. It's the best news in the world if you're a power-grabbing liberal Democrat, because it means Obama will be reelected again. And thank God Gingrich got beaten down. What's her name? Amway. I call her Amway. I have nothing against Amway, but she always reminded me of an Amway saleswoman selling bars of soap, the Abhi Ghosh gal. She's gone off the charts. Paul is surging. Rick Santorum is, for some reason, surging. God only knows why. I don't know. I don't understand it. Romney already in the toilet. Gingrich down to 10%. Poor old Perry. He's like an old horse still running around the track at 7%. And there's old spindly lunatic, Paul, head of the pack. Unbelievable to me. So now all we have to hear is that Obama picks Hillary Clinton as his vice presidential running mate. It's the end of the story. Can you imagine a ticket with Obama and Hillary Clinton versus Ron Paul and, let's fill in the blank, let's say Ron Paul picks a woman. Now, who would loony Ron Paul pick? He certainly wouldn't pick the Tundra Tootsie, because she'd be too competitive, so she wouldn't even accept that. So you'd have to pick someone even more crackpotty than he. Now, I don't know who that would be. Who could he pick? Who would he pick? Who would Ron Paul pick as a running mate? I can't even imagine who he'd pick. I wouldn't even hazard a comedic guess. Who do you think he would pick as a running mate? It does matter, you know. It does matter. What if he picked someone you never heard of? Remember when that happened a while ago? One of them picked someone like a general you never heard of? That went nowhere. Mexican Grand Warlock predicts Obama loss in 2012. Mexican Grand Warlock. Let me see that story here. Mexico's Grand Warlock predicted U.S. President Barack Obama would fail to win re-election, and two more Latin American leaders would be diagnosed with cancer in a traditional New Year's forecast Tuesday. The Grand Warlock, or Brujo Mayor, leads a Mexican tradition of brujeria, or sorcery, centered in the southeastern city of Catemaco. The Grand Warlock, also known as Antonio Vasquez, said that Venezuelan blah, 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 claims to... Blah, blah. So he claims who's going to win. Does he say who's going to win? Vasquez, who claims to have a 75 to 80% accuracy rate, last year said the euro would weaken, a recession would return to developed economies, but he also predicted incorrectly that a Latin American leader would be assassinated. Huh. That's very interesting, because Chavez is now claiming the U.S. gave him cancer. That's the first I've ever heard. I've heard of crazy theories, but the Grand Warlock said that Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who claims to have beaten an unspecified cancer, would have a terrible relapse. You know that Argentina's President, Cristina Kirchner, Brazilian President Rousseff, and former Brazilian leader Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, and Paraguay's Fernando Lugo have been diagnosed with cancer in recent years. What's this with cancer in South America? Can anyone explain that? I'll be right back. Savage. I have been pondering who Ron Paul might pick as a running mate, since it's being bandied about that Obama may pick Hillary Clinton as his VP a choice, which would be a brilliant choice for the Democrats, socialist power grabbers, because the people would vote for that ticket. So who would Ron Paul, if God forbid he's the candidate? I came up with a short list of VP candidates. It would have to be a woman. And so these are some of the choices. Tell me what you think. Ron Paul and Kalissa Gingrich. Ron Paul and Arianna Huffington, since they agree politically on almost everything. Or how about Ron Paul and Meghan McCain? She said she's a sexual Republican, whatever that is. That means all other Republicans don't believe in sex, but Meghan McCain does. The pill doesn't fall far from the you know. Or he could even pick Mika Brzezinski, because they both agree that Israel shouldn't exist. So therefore, you've got choices there. That'd be a heck of a race. It would be Obama and Hillary Clinton versus Ron Paul and Meghan McCain, or or the others that I just mentioned. I hope you're enjoying the show, because to me it's a hysterical situation. Again, I have to keep using the one analogy I have that's, I think, potent. I feel as though I'm a slave watching the master vote. We're allowed to peer through the plantation window and see what the white folk are doing over there in the Caucasian caucus of Iowa, where only a few hundred thousand, the whole world is watching what a few hundred thousand Cornhuskers think about who should be the next Republic. It's astounding to me. We keep hearing about diversity and changing demographics and gerrymandering. And here we are. We're back in Iowa. Suddenly it's 1874 again. It's beyond comprehension. So they've made me feel as though I'm four-fifths a human and I don't have the right to vote. Only people who live in Iowa get to vote. And next, they go to the geniuses in New Hampshire, where a few people who live in trailer parks get to determine the next outcome. And I'm supposed to believe that New Hampshire now represents America. Again, like a slave looking through the plantation window. At least it's one man's opinion, and quite unique at that. Don't you think?
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are some of the notes for the Savage Nation. I have renamed the Iowa caucuses the Caucasian Caucus. Do you think Iowa really represents America? It's not even a primary. It's just a straw poll. It's really a poll is all it is. Will the outcome of this caucus tonight change anything for you? Do you fear Obama will begin indefinitely detaining American citizens, not for national security reasons, but for political security reasons? The NDAA says that anyone who is, quote, part of or substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces can be detained indefinitely. This is quite broad. Who do you most fear could be included under the headings of associated forces? Could it be anyone with a website that links to a story from Al Jazeera? Could it be a member of a gun club? Could it be returning war veterans? Could it be anyone deemed to be a member of a hate group by the left-wing ACLU? Liberals, if you opposed Bush being given the power to detain U.S. citizens indefinitely, how can you support this when Obama is given the same dictatorial powers? The man accused of starting car fires in Los Angeles is said to be from Germany, but if you look carefully, he's carrying Chechenian papers. The story is being broadcast everywhere in the media that he's from Germany. Okay, what's going on in China? The rich in supposedly communist China bought the most Rolls Royces in the world last year. They take the cake, a $314,000 cake, in luxury spending. Arab League dissidents disagree on progress in Syria. France stiffens citizenship requirements. Foreigners must take a tough new language test and swear allegiance to French values. Critics call it a far-right ploy for votes in upcoming elections. Yeah, right. What else is in the news? Well, let's go to michaelsavage.com for all the news that I found worthy of your attention. Top right, Caucasian caucus begins. It's absurd because Iowa cannot be a bellwether given that there are very few minorities there. It's really nothing more than a straw poll. The L.A. firebug, who says, I hate America, is from Chechnya. They claim Germany. Look carefully. A Somali immigrant is held in a machete killing. She killed another woman with a machete. Muslim youth in Russia killed a man dressed as Santa Claus as they screamed infidel at him. Did psychopaths take over Wall Street? Americans buy record number of guns for Christmas. In China, authorities clash with Muslims over a mosque. They demolished a mosque. How do you like that? Obama signed the Defense Act. Now what? It expands the power and scope of the federal government, but do you care? The idiotic EEOC says a high school diploma requirement for a job might violate the ADA. I rest my case. Friendly fire killed hero ATF agent. He was trying to stop a drug-addled ex-con from robbing a pharmacy, and another cop saw the tussle and shot the wrong person. Wow. Library sends police to collect overdue books from a five-year-old. How do you like that? A Chicago jogger was critically injured by pit bulls. They were just going after the man like he was a piece of steak. Some breeds should just not be bred. Navy pilot among four found dead in an upscale San Diego condo. It's astonishing. Great young man, just taken his first flight aboard an F-18 fighter jet, dead, his sister dead, and two others dead. I wonder what that was about. Children becoming addicted to computers.
The real motivation behind the September 11th attacks and the vast majority of other instances of suicide terrorism is not that our enemies are bothered by our way of life. Neither is it our religion or our wealth. Rather, it is primarily occupation. If you were to imagine for a moment how you would feel if another country forcibly occupied the United States, had military bases and armed soldiers present in our hometown, you might begin to understand why foreign occupation upsets people so much.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com.
What should I do? Should I read you from the book? Sometimes fiction is closer to the truth than you can actually say. The final twist of the knife came 3 weeks later when the British Home Office released a list of terrorists and criminals who were banned from traveling to the United Kingdom. To Jack's utter surprise, his name was on that list. The Home Secretary hadn't bothered to include Osama bin Laden, but right there front and center was John Samuel Hatfield, former combat journalist and network news commentator, whose, quote, radical and provocative statements, unquote, were deemed a threat to public security. Several weeks later, the London Daily News ran a story on the ban, revealing a series of illuminating email exchanges between the Home Office and the Prime Minister. What the newspaper uncovered was a case of political cowardice in the extreme. Jack Hatfield was being used to make the British government's bias against Muslims seem relatively tame and tolerant. This was the same government that many believed was instrumental in the concurrent release by Scottish officials of Abdel Basset El-Megiri, a convicted terrorist who was responsible for the fiery deaths of 270 people on an airplane passing over Lockerbie. Months later, it came out that the very Home Secretary who had banned Jack had been using government funds to support her husband's pornography viewing habit. When a reporter from a London tabloid had asked Jack for a newspaper quote, here's what he said, quote, her politics are more pornographic than any sex scene. What can be more obscene than the government of the UK refusing to deport radical Muslims who preach the overthrow of England, demand the introduction of Sharia law, and chant death to the Queen, all the while refusing to lift the ban against Jack Hatfield? I am the only member of the American media prohibited from entering the UK because of the degenerate political minds of the Home Secretary and her cohorts, close quote. So you see, I said that in the novel, which I couldn't say here on the radio. I'll just finish out the page. The hypocrisy of the UK and the weak-kneed sensibilities of his own nation were stunning. But with his credibility all but destroyed, he was forced to surrender those battles, withdraw from the national scene, use his wits and skills and whatever closet supporters he had left, and thank God there were a bunch of them, to earn a living. He did it alone because his wife had withered under the scrutiny and catcalls, the burning bags of feces on a doorstep, and the death threats on voicemail. He made his deals in back rooms, wrote or produced anonymously, because even his friends were afraid of Lawrence Soren, Muslim backlash, or both. But he did it all, survived, so he could get to this point. Not to stroke his wounded pride, not to show a president or prime minister that by God he was right. He did it for this one chance to help the nation save itself from itself. The next scene is set in Sofia, Bulgaria, where Hassan Haddad goes to assassinate somebody. 1-800-449-8255. You're listening to The Savage Nation. I'm actually stirred reading my own book.
Savage.
What's that smell?
Corn, corn, corn,
Iowa City.
Corn, 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 corn,
look, a tree.
Corn, corn, corn,
Des
Moines. Corn, 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 corn,
there's that smell again.
Corn, corn.
Now, we're going to go back to the book Abuse of Power. I want to read you a few pages from San Francisco because this is where the book gets really interesting. And Jack's walking around the city. He's trying to find it, you know, make a living now because they threw him out after what they did to him. In the week following the blast, Jack found himself between assignments. He spent much of that time trying to get information from the FBI press office about progress in the case, but they were as tight-lipped as always. So he kept himself busy with idle pursuits, drinking in the city he loved. He enjoyed being downtown during the 9-to-5 hustle, the buses, the rush to the underground BART, tubes on Market, the girls hurrying to dates with their girlfriends in this gay-friendly town where straight men were as rare as eagles. He loved the loud twitter of the green parrots of Telegraph Hill, as they alighted in tall trees near Bum Park, adjacent to the Embarcadero office tower, seeking shelter for the night. Sometimes Jack would marvel like a schoolboy at the great flock that flew outside the apartment he kept by the bay, chattering in a mad formation, racing to their next stop. He was amazed by the large number of green parrots in the wild flock, said to have grown from a single pair that had escaped captivity some 20 years back, parrots from South America. They had taken to the trees of Telegraph Hill and dispersed into other sections of the city. And then I talk more about the birds and about Maxine and the plot. And then he goes, and she says to him, Maxine, she's the black detective who he works with. She says to him, how are you going to survive, she asked, showing genuine concern. He said, I've got a little cushion. That was something he owed to his father. Not the money itself, but the idea of saving. He used to tell his son, you can always count on watches breaking. What you cannot rely on is people getting them fixed. He watched his money carefully, and the lesson wasn't lost on Jack. That was another area where his former wife and he had disagreed. She liked to indulge in the fashions of the moment, from expensive clothes to fancy restaurants. Jack didn't mind some of that, but as a treat, not a lifestyle. And it wasn't just her. That sense of entitlement, of rampant decadence, was everywhere. Driving over the Golden Gate Bridge one night, Jack wondered about the decline of America. He couldn't believe that the entire bridge, this beautiful Art Deco structure, had been built in only 2 years. Such a fate would be impossible today, considering the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the laws, the lawsuits, the regulations, the spotted owls, and the environment. Construction would take forever. As with all those hypocrites, the special interests had jumped up their own self-importance, inflated their own influence and resources at the dearest price of all, the diminishing of America. As he drove under the South Tower, Jack looked up at the spires. He was one of the few civilians that knew there were elevators running inside these spires right to the top. An old Bohemian friend from North Beach had been an iron worker on the bridge and once took Jack up to the top to see one of the most stupendous views in the world. He felt as if he were only a step away from heaven. Page 53, Abuse of Power. On Friday, Jack and Tony walked to Pagliacci's on the wharf, one of their favorite restaurants, taking the long way up Columbus Avenue. On the way, they saw an old familiar face, Johnny Evans, retired SFPD. They nodded hello as they passed. Married 3 times, noted Jack, when they were out of earshot. All brief wives, muttered Tony. Brief wives once made the briefs rise, Jack retorted. Now they fill the court's briefs with lies. Tony snorted a laugh. A new mantra? Not new, Jack said. Just haven't thought about it for a while. Well, go easy on the Rachel juice. You don't want your ex-wife coming up on you. True enough, it's just that she's been on my mind. Because I think it's a default setting. Things come apart like they did the other day. It shoots me to my own blast zones. Iraq or Rachel. Familiar turf, stuff you've already wrestled with, lets you get your footing to process new trauma.
Call me at 1-800-449-8255. Albany, New York, on another question. Joe, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. How are you tonight?
Go on. What's your main point?
Hello?
Yeah, Joe, what's your main point?
I just wanted to say I'm a new listener. I've been listening to you for 5 months, and me and my girlfriend, we get nervous when we don't hear you.
I know I become a big part of a lot of Americans' lives, and I know a lot of people listen to me. I was in a supermarket yesterday, and a man who teaches in dental school said to me, Michael, is that you? Is that Teddy? I said, yes. He said, you have no idea how popular you are on the campus of, and I won't name the university. He said, we all listen to you. He said, all of the professors stop what they're doing and turn the radio on when you come on the air. You have become our voice on the radio. I know that, Joe. I have a big, big group of people who rely upon this show. I get it, Joe. I do. So let me send you a gift. I think you'll enjoy it. I went to Home Depot. I went to Orchard Supply the other day. You know how I relax sometimes? You wouldn't believe it. I go into Orchard Supply Hardware. They don't even advertise. They should. First of all, I like their train calendars. That's number one. You know how relaxing it is for me to walk in an American supermarket and see the bounty on all the shelves, the great selection of foods? And I realize, as someone who understands business, what it takes to grow the food, to raise the animal, to grow the fruit, to harvest the fruit of the animal, to package it, to preserve it, to ship it, to market it. It's astounding to understand how complicated our food distribution system really is. And I marvel at it. The same way when I go into a store like OSH, I look at the hammers and the nails and the screwdrivers and the wrenches and the drills and the mops and the brooms and the light bulbs, and they're all there. If I need a screw, I can get the exact screw. And I marvel at the capitalist system that permits people to invest in making so much as a humble nut or a screw and to bring it to market, and I could buy it for 4 cents. It's astounding to me how this all works. And I can guarantee you, if you ask any of the vermin in the gutters of America saying Occupy Wall Street, if they even understood one iota of what it means to raise a plum and bring it to market, or to manufacture a widget and to bring it to market, they wouldn't have the slightest idea. But they all know the rhetoric. We're Wall Street millionaires, and the Wall Street millionaires, and the Wall Street bring down their banks. They're schmucks. That's what they learned. That's what they learned. The schmucks went to college for 4 years. Look what they came out. Look what they know. They know absolutely nothing. The reason they're unemployed is because they're not fit for anything. That's my humble opinion. And let me tell you something else. If you think it was easy for me to get where I am, you're mistaken. I have been told not to apply for jobs because I was a white male. Now, I could have given up. I could have joined some radical group. I could have become another malcontent walking around with a hatred for everybody. But I didn't. I had to go out and I had to get reeducated. I had to learn a new profession, a new career. And I had to walk on glass. I had to swim through fire to get where I am. But guess what? If you have the willpower, like Herman Cain said, and like I'm telling you, you can find plenty of work in this country. You can find plenty of opportunity in this country. You can find plenty of ways to make a living in this country, if only you'd stop blaming others. Unfortunately, we have a blamer-in-chief in the White House, a lazy president who got where he is through favors and through favoritism. And whenever things go wrong, he points his finger and he blames everybody but himself. And then he goes on either a golfing trip or on another vacation. This is not a very inspiring president. This is the most dividing president in American history, which is why you have these malcontents in the gutters of America. Make no mistake about it. They do not have a valid message whatsoever. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Most of them argue that Hamdi and Quirin, two Supreme Court cases, have justified holding U.S. citizens as enemy combatants. I guess my point is that I agreed with Scalia, who is the dissent in the Hamdi case, and who said that really high treason has been tried in our courts usually, and it is the exception to ever give up our rights. It's happened during war. But my point about this is a war without end. I'm afraid of giving up the right to trial by jury and hoping that someday they will declare an end to this war and they'll give back the right to trial by jury. It really concerns me. Well, their other argument is that there will be one procedural hurdle, and the procedural hurdle is that there will be a habeas, or you have to present the body. The judge has to rule on whether or not the person can be held. But my argument to them was that, to me, is the beginning of due process. That's not the end of due process. To have a habeas hearing before a judge to see if you can hold a prisoner is the beginning of due process, but that's not all of due process. Due process involves a jury trial, a judge, legal help on both sides of the equation, and a conclusion. So there's much more than just a habeas hearing.
Right.
But they claim that having a habeas hearing is enough. But the problem is then you hold somebody after one hearing, you can hold them indefinitely.
New Year's Eve, Barack Hussein Obama signed the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. This law provides the United States military to arrest citizens and to be held without trial. This is very serious business. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to discuss this is Benjamin Friedman, a research fellow on defense and homeland security at the Cato Institute. Benjamin Friedman, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
So, are you as alarmed as I am about the NDAA bill that Obama signed on New Year's Eve?
I think the trouble with the bill is more what it doesn't do than what it does. And what it doesn't do is say, no, there are certain things that the President of the United States can't do in the name of counterterrorism. Instead, it sort of affirms all these powers the President has claimed and then says in the next breath, well, we're not actually trying to change the established law. There's a provision that says that. So it winds up being rather confusing what the purpose of even writing this section was, since it sort of undoes anything it seems to have done. But at the end of the day, I think it could be read by future courts to say that Congress has in some ways affirmed very broad claims the president, both of the last two presidents, have made to detain Americans and also non-Americans. And I think that's unfortunate. I think we need more restrictions on what the president can do.
In your opinion, does this bill allow for United States citizens to be held without trial? I believe it does.
It does not forbid that. What the bill does is say, look, there's an authorization of military force from 2001. We affirm that that authorization of military force gives the president the power to detain, militarily detain without trial, this broad group of people, Al-Qaeda, its associated forces, those who support them. And it doesn't have an exception for American citizens. It then says, well, we don't mean for this language to change the current law. But the current law is basically what the last two presidents have claimed, with some restrictions from the Supreme Court, which is a very broad claim of authority, including, yeah, the right to militarily detain American citizens. So, yes, the bill allows that. It allows it by not forbidding it. And when future courts look at Americans, if an American is detained by a future president, this president says he won't do it, but he doesn't reject the right to do it. But if a future president detains an American and they object under constitutional grounds, this could be cited. I think this law could be cited to enhance the president's claims, to verify these sort of war power claims that he's making, because that's sort of the way this jurisprudence works.
Why are none of the major media outlets talking about this horrible bill?
Well, I mean, I know it's gotten a fair amount of attention in the newspapers. I guess maybe on TV it's not been covered that much. I think one reason is just because it's complicated. And, you know, you got to sort of read the legislation and say, well, it says this, but then it says that. You know, the broader answer is just, I don't know. You know, I wish they would cover it more, and I can't really explain what their motives are.
There are many horrible elements in this bill, but what in your mind is the worst?
Well, I think the worst thing in the bill is just that the Congress is bowing down before presidential authority. And I use that language very intentionally. You know, this is a liberal democracy, and we ought to have a presumption. Even if we say that war powers like this are constitutional, we ought to have a presumption in a liberal society that they shouldn't be applied. And even if the president says that he's not going to use them, we shouldn't just give him those powers anyway, which is what this bill does. So that's what's really most offensive about it. To me, it's not really just this bill. It's really a state of mind we've been in for years in this country.
Well, what, if anything, can be done to reverse this?
Well, we still got a Congress, and we still got elections, and this bill is on the books now, but there's nothing to say that a future act of Congress couldn't undo it. The ultimately claims of war powers that the president makes to detain or even kill Americans overseas, which we're doing, which the last two presidents have claimed, are subject to constitutional litigation. And now we're not going to have a plaintiff on the detention matters anytime soon, an American plaintiff, because the president says he won't use the detention powers that way. But eventually they will. And there might then be a constitutional case where somebody challenges these detention powers. And if Congress has said, no, we don't think you have this power, that might be interpreted, or ought to be interpreted, by future courts to limit it. Because under this Jackson test, which has been used since the Youngstown Steel case in 1952, where Justice Jackson said, well, the president's powers are at their highest ebb when Congress has affirmed them, and at their lowest ebb when they've rejected them, and then they're sort of in the middle when Congress has said nothing. Well, what Congress does affects that test. So if Congress were to say something clear about, we reject your authority to your claimed authority to detain Americans under counterterrorism, the war on terrorism, well, then it might affect the constitutional question. So I think that's really what could be done.
Benjamin Friedman, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great to talk to you.
I'm going to talk about these and other topics even if the rest of the media refuses to. This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Houston, Texas. Carlos, welcome to the show. What's on your mind, Carlos?
Yes, doctor. I just wanted to say that I think that most males on this planet, animal or human, are not monogamous.
Well, I've read that biologically the male is not monogamous, and that the institution of marriage is one created for the stability of the family. And unto itself, a man has to commit himself to the family by eschewing his sexual urges and focusing instead on the family instead of his desire to sow his wild oats on a regular basis.
Well, I can agree with that, doctor. I'm glad that you are kind of agreeing with me as far as.
Well, I am agreeing with you. I am biologically the male wants to sow his seed in a wide variety of manner, disperse his seed, let's put it to you that way. The male is made that way. But the institution of marriage is designed to raise a family with a father. And as you well know, the healthier children come from a father and a mother. The nuclear family produces healthier children, no matter what the liars tell you in the psychological world. No matter how they lie to you, the child needs a mother and a father. It is a strain for some men, but it's not a strain for all men. I assume you yourself are not married, Carlos. You have not found the woman who you're willing to satisfy your urges with.
No, I've been married 40 years.
Oh. So how did you control your non-monogamy?
I didn't.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. Is this a confessional or a talk radio show?
No, it's just the truth.
All right, so wait a minute. So you're telling me you haven't married 40 years, but you have not been faithful?
No, I have not.
Now, I'm not trying to pry. It really isn't my business, but you, in other words, does your wife know about your impulses?
I've had many mistresses in my 40 years. I have several. Many, I would say.
No, but I'm saying, but is your wife aware of them?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's no way that you can hide women and children. And at my age, you get involved with a woman. She usually has children. You're not going to hide no woman and two kids or something like that from anyone.
But I'm saying, are you still married to the same woman that you married originally?
Yes, I am.
And does she know this is who you are?
She's very intelligent, and yes, she knows exactly who I am.
All right, you know what? Let me explain something to you. Many women will accept that some men are like that, and they live with it, by the way. And apparently that's the lifestyle you chose, but of course most women wouldn't. And by the way, social mores are changing to the extent that many women would like to enjoy the same freedom in that regard that men have thought to be their privilege, and that's the problem today. And that's why many young women will not get married. They're not willing to suppress their sexuality for the sake of a family either, which is why the population is dying in the United States of America. The more highly educated they are, the lower the morality quotient. And it's absolutely true. The higher the educational quotient, generally, the lower the morality, the lower the LM, the LMQ. There's nothing you can do about it. And I've talked about this, and I think sexuality is always an interesting topic. I think that ultimately sexuality is very political. And I guess what I'm getting at here is that the left-wing establishment now is trying to declare a sexuality, male sexuality, in the traditional sense of very hypersexual male sexuality, to be an illness so they can declare it to be such and put it into the DSM, the Diagnostic Manual, whatever that may be. Virtually every act of a human being is now considered to be a disorder. When the day they put liberalism in the DSM is the day I'll start believing in psychology. Because as you well know, I've defined this as a mental disorder. There's no other explanation for the suicidal behavior of extreme liberalism, by the way. Now, to say Tiger Woods, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the Frenchie, who are caught in sex scandals, are suddenly sex addicts, I don't think they're sex addicts. They're hypersexual men. But I don't know that that's an illness. That's the way they are. And by the way, Frenchie's wife knew what he was doing. Everyone in France knew that he was a socialist perv. Everybody in France knew that this is who Frenchie was. if he actually did this, he was a fool. In his case, this was not a disorder. This was stupidity. With that man's power and money, he could have dialed a woman up in New York City at Softitel Hotel. You're telling me the Softitel Hotel chain couldn't have provided him with the service he was looking for? Why did he have to impose himself upon a chambermaid? And that's why I don't think it's a true story. Something doesn't make sense in the whole picture. Now, if he did this, then maybe he is mentally nuts, if he actually jumped on that woman and forced her. You know, I mean, then that's not even a mental illness. That's a criminal act. You know what I'm saying? Now that they can wear trousers, I have a better idea. Why can't maids go in two at a time? Why solo? For especially for a suite of this size in the Softitel Hotel? It makes no sense to me. So, okay, there's a lot of Strauss-Kahn cartoons coming out from around the world. I believe that the Softitel Hotel should provide them with the option of wear. And frankly, when it attacks a woman from a crazed male, I'm all for it. They should have the right to do their job without being molested. Okay, let's be clear. But the fact of the matter is, I think this was beyond that. I think this man, if he did rape her, was a sick man. It had nothing to do with his sexuality, incidentally. But anyway, let's get back to the desire on the part of the liberal establishment to declare hypersexuality as a disorder. What do you think about that? Linda in New York, WOR, go ahead. What do you think?
I could say that I'm a hypersexual if it's put that way, because I like men. And I like to have sex, but it doesn't mean that I'm having sex with many men, right? I have desires. I think about sex in my mind, but that doesn't make me a sick person, right?
Well, but let's say in your daily life, let's say you're going around. Do you fantasize many men during the day? As many, like, say you're in New York City, millions of people. Do you often get like, oh, wow, he's great, blah, blah, blah?
If I find a very good-looking man, yes, I can think about it.
So in that sense, you're no different than a male. It's just that males think they're the only ones who do it. And by the way, a lot of men suffer guilt. They think there's something wrong with them because they can't stop obsessing about sex. But this is interesting. I think this was studied even in my day 30 years ago, and it was found that men fantasize about women almost all day long, even at work. They cannot stop fantasizing about sexuality, especially when they're younger.
Right.
But isn't that the nature's imperative? Isn't that what produces children, to have that kind of urge that's so overwhelmingly powerful and overwhelmingly strong, especially in young, viable people? Is that not what nature designed us to have in order for us to find a mate and to have children?
Exactly.
Right. So in other words, it's normal to have that kind of impulse. And men should not. Yeah, at the end of the day, men or women who have these fantasies all the time, if it's not really wrecking their lives, why feel bad about it? This is who you are. This is how the machine set it up. You're supposed to feel those things. Now, on the other hand, there are those who sublimate that drive and usually produce great things, incidentally. If you can take that sexual energy, this is an amazing discussion. You got to understand that this is very Freudian, by the way, what I'm about to tell you, but I'm from another era. If you believe that Freud was correct, and I do believe he was the genius of all geniuses, he was the peasant avante of psychology, of psychiatry. Nobody has ever succeeded him in his genius. And I've read all of Freud, I've read all of Jung, and I've read all of Adler. I have not seen anyone come along since. I know they are a behavioralist and they use medication. But in terms of analyzing things, Sigmund Freud, in his analysis, by saying that, in essence, I'll make it very simple. It's like trying to say Einstein developed a theory of relativity E=mc². I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that. Freud said that we're all fundamentally sexual creatures and driven by our sexuality all of our lives, and all of our neurosis is derived from repressed sexuality. I think that's a fairly good summation of Freud's Freudian psychology, right? Is that we're all sexual, and all of our neurotic behavior or even psychotic behavior derives from sexual repression. Now, if you start with that premise, a lot of your life starts to make sense. But you can go from that to this, which is, If you learn how to take that intense coil of desire within you, let's say you're obsessing, you can't control it. But if you learn how to sublimate that energy, think of it as an energy in you. Instead of hating it, instead of running from it, instead of fearing it, learn how to use it. You can literally destroy mountains. You can create mountains with that energy. What do you think an artist is doing by sculpting or painting obsessively? You can look at it from the point of view of Freud and say that it's sexual sublimation, if you wish. You can say that every building in Manhattan is a result of sexual sublimation. I'm not the first one to say this to you. But remember, I come from another age. I went to college in the 1950s. What year did I enter Queens College? 1959. I got out in 1963, right? Something like that, I think. So when I was studying Psych 101, and I'm no psychologist, but I've been around a while, Freud was the god of gods, right? And so the fact is, I don't think things have changed. I don't think human nature changes. And what I'm saying to you is that there are methods you can use if you are, let's say, driven by sexuality that can change your life for the better. It doesn't mean you have to say, oh, I'm a sick person because I'm always fantasizing about a woman, or I'm a nymphomaniac because I can't stop thinking about sex with guys. What should I do? And then you're going to go to one of these lame-brained, minuscule, Lilliputian psychologist who's going to say, well, you're sick, you're in the manual, here you are, we defined you, take medication and you won't feel it anymore. Well, you don't have to do that.
Savage.